I'm Nash Wedderburn, and this is UBS's Top of the Morning. Today, we take a look into the latest edition of the Fixed Income Strategist and explore the greener side of the asset class, including opportunities within. My guests today are Senior Fixed Income Strategist Americas, Leslie Falconio, and Dan Kelsch, Senior Credit Strategist Americas, from both the UBS Chief Investment Office. So good morning, Leslie and Dan. Great to have you both in the studio.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
So just to level set, Leslie, I'll pivot you, to you for the first question. Maybe start by walking us through the overall theme of this month's FIZ report.
Yeah, well, I mean, one of the things that we decided to do this month, because, you know, not only throughout the entire year, but even with a lot of the blog activity, you know, we've pretty much made known our positions, what's driving the marketplace, and heading into the fourth quarter is on a time that we actually want to take on a lot of extra risk. So, and what we decided to do is just shift the topic a bit to a very important topic and a very pertinent topic in terms of, you know, the green bonds within fixed income. And, you know, Dan sort of leads that charge on the fixed income side, and he was kind enough to, you know, do the lead for us this month, and I thought it was great. And I think that it's something where, you know, particularly on the fixed income side, doesn't get as much PR, say, on the equity side. Mm-hmm. I mean, part of that is just due to the sector, and part of that is just due to the ability of scalability. But either way, I mean, one of the things that we try to do this month is take a different approach to an opportunity set that may not be as noted within the fixed income set.
Great. I appreciate that. And you, as you touched on a little bit with the green bonds, I'll pivot over to you, Dan. Just walk us through that. What can you share on that side as you contributed to this report?
Sure. I mean, I guess I'll try to label a few high-level points to level set the conversation for us. And that one, you know, we define green bonds as any bond where proceeds from that offering are designated for projects with an environmental or climate-related benefit. So we're looking at an explicit designation made by the issuer. That's sort of the process or the focus we've employed. The one thing I would say is it's likely that, you know, in the past and in the present, there are likely a lot of issues that sort of meet this criteria but aren't explicitly designated. No doubt, you know, the municipal community has had plenty of offerings that have gone towards some type of climate or environmental benefit, but not necessarily been related. So it's likely that the actual universe of bonds might be underrepresented from what we are looking at when we kind of look at that designation that people make of saying it's green. One thing that is happening in the market is you are seeing some standards start to gain some traction, and some third-party verification. And the standards can center around not just saying, I'm going to label this bond green and tell you where the proceeds are going, but actually looking beyond that to say, all right, what can we do in terms of ongoing reporting of how that project's completion is or what the environmental impact is of that specific project? They might go so far as to say, what kind of reporting can you do to ensure investors that the cash isn't being commingled with sort of non-green funds or used for other things? Third-party verification is something that can be done by, you know, sort of like an auditing type firm that might come in and sort of diligence the bond that's actually being offered, what the proceeds are, validating it in some sense. But the key thing we'd like to flag is that, you know, these things are sort of what's emerging. That's sort of the way the market's heading, but they haven't been fully embraced in the U.S. market right now. Mm-hmm. And I think one big thing is that, you know, to do this type of audit work, to get this type of verification, that comes with some type of administrative expense for the issuer. And we just don't think issuers are incentivized yet to incur that additional expense. As we look at the market broadly, in 2019, globally, there's been over $170 billion of issuance year to date. The U.S., it's over $120 billion. I'm sorry, over $20 billion, excuse me. Mm-hmm. But you get the sense that the U.S. represents a pretty small share of what's taking place globally. And that means when you look at the global market, there's probably more mature thinking. I think it's a little bit more advanced, this idea of standards and verification. We just haven't seen as much of it in the U.S. But we do think that's the direction the market's heading. And as this gains more interest, more demand, we think that this market will mature and some of these things will become more common market practice. One thing that I think is helpful to flag is the Japan has, you know, one of the largest public retirement systems in the globe. And they made an announcement that any third-party manager that wants to take assets from them to manage has to incorporate some type of ESG criteria into their selection process. And we think that's indicative of just sort of that end-user demand that can really drive sort of third-party managers that'll end up kind of creating more demand for product. The more demand there is for product, the more issuers see a benefit of kind of going into that market. And we think this probably creates kind of a collective effect of they're pushing that market, there being a greater chance for there to be more issuance. It's become kind of a growing topic that we're going to see. You know, again, the U.S. market is smaller than what's going on sort of globally. So folks should keep that in mind. The U.S. market does have corps and munis in it. So folks looking to play both ways can opportunistic look at each of these markets. And then, but you know, again, the green bond share of the U.S. market and global market, it's going to be small relative to what there is in total fixed income out there. So we want to introduce this topic to people. We know as a firm, we're trying to really get excited about this, but we just flagged that it's something that's growing. It's an opportunity that's coming. But, you know, as folks kind of learn more about it, hopefully they can develop some appreciation. And then as opportunities present themselves, maybe they can take a look to make an allocation in their portfolios.
So I guess, Dan, it's still in the early stages here in the States side, right?
Yes. Okay. Yes, very much so.
Absolutely.
And one thing, we didn't put this in the FIZ, but there can be one truth to, you know, if someone's out there saying, this sounds great, I want to really take action. It's not always easy being green. Supply of products can be a challenge. So really building a robust portfolio that really meets these criteria, that can be something that can be a challenge for an individual investor today.
Absolutely. Pretty interesting. And then pivoting over to another opportunity, Liz, that you mentioned in the report is mortgage-backed securities versus corporates. Can you walk us through those opportunities there?
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that we've always spoken about is that when we look at the total returns of fixed income is knowing how you've got that total return. I mean, meaning that what's driving that total return.
Yep.
And when we look at the investment grade corporate side, obviously one of the bigger drivers has been the fact that it's longer duration and it has interest rate risk. And one of the things that we talked about in this report, particularly the mortgage-backed securities section, is that we compare like a AA corporate to the MB to mortgage-backed securities, which are AAA. It's very hard to compare a AAA to a AAA in the corporate market, so we do the AA to the AAA comparison, which are both pretty much the same thing. And so what we've seen here is that, listen, you know, corporates came off a fairly bleak 2018, and you know they've had the interest rate risk, which has been a beneficiary this year as yields have fallen. And they've also coming off a poor year, so spreads have compressed. So you've seen spreads compressing in the corporate market. But in the mortgage-backed securities market, you know, the 5% return has really just come from the fact it has interest rate small interest rate risk, but has interest rate risk, not spread compression. And because we've seen these multi-year lows in the mortgage rate, which although over the long term is beneficial to the economy, we've obviously seen a spike in what we call the refi index. And the spike in the refi index, and I use the word spike, you know, it sounds a lot worse than it is, but because, you know, it's increased percentage-wise fairly materially, but it's coming off a very low base because we had such high mortgage rates in 2018 when the 10-year yield had gotten to 3.24. So what we've seen is this dislocation where spreads in the IG corporate markets are tightening, spreads in the MBS market have been widening, and it's, you know, created this opportunity where we've got mortgages the widest in spread that we've seen to corporates in almost 5-6 years. So with that said, why am I still neutral mortgage-backed securities? Well, two things. One is that, you know, frankly, when you look at we wrote about this in the FIZ 2 months ago. When you look at times of recession, actually mortgages have a tendency to outperform corporates because there's more liquid and they're AAA. And, you know, quasi-government guaranteed. However, the reason why I'm not going into them in the fourth quarter really is because we expect volatility to rise. If there is a tweak in Brexit that we're not anticipating or the trade talks completely collapse, it's very possible that you break below that 144 low in 10-year yield. Not what I'm anticipating, but definitely possible. And if that happens and you go towards that all historic low of 132, then, you know, the mortgage-backed securities market's going to have a little bit of tough time keeping up. So that's why we are neutral. With that said, as we turn the corner from the fourth quarter, assume that everything is fairly equal, you know, we do think opportunistically, not only mortgages, MBS are a better AAA safe haven than corporates are, but they also are fundamentally cheap.
So with that being said, where are you seeing rates heading near term?
You know, we're right now, I mean, assuming you don't have this fat element that we're not expecting like a, you know, Brexit decision that we don't think or a complete breakdown of trade talks, you know, we are range bound. We think anywhere like a 1-6 area is what we're going to see at the end. But within that said, that could be where we are at the end of the year. But the intraday volatility we anticipate to be very, very high. And you've seen it. You know, you went from a 144 at the end of August all the way almost up to 190. Yeah. You had a 50 basis point rise in 2.5 weeks. Then you come back down. Mm-hmm. I mean, the market is so susceptible to just tweets and, you know, trade talks that the intraday volatility is very, very high. So although we don't think the 10-year yield in terms of today to the end of the year is going to move meaningfully, the intraday volatility will be high.
Absolutely. And then, Dan, I guess back to you, given that, where do you see green bonds performing with that backdrop of interest rates?
Yeah. One thing I would say that's helpful to flag, I think, is just that because a bond is green does not necessarily make there's any kind of indication about the credit quality, right? It's, you know, it's issued by an issuer that likely has many other issues outstanding. And so I don't know if we can necessarily differentiate the green performance from non-green on that easily. One thing I do think we'd say, though, is that, you know, performance and yields of green bonds should largely be in line with what's taking place in other, you know, comparable credit quality fixed income instruments, particularly from the same issuer. However, one thing we do notice in green bonds that I think is interesting is that during periods of market sell-offs, where you can see some real spread widening in some asset classes, green bonds tend to trade in just lower volumes. And we think it's partly because there's just not as much of that product available, that a green dedicated mandate, an investment mandate, would be more likely to probably just sit on their green bonds. You know, that's one thing that's got a more of a, not just a performance driven reason for holding it, but also this other mandate. And so when we looked at one example in particular, Apple has a green bond, and they've got a couple of other non-green ones that have, you know, good comparables in terms of, you know, maturity timeframe, things like that. And what we can see is that the volume in that non-green issue is just a fraction of what you can see. A volume in the green issue is a small fraction of what you've seen in the non-green. And we think that's because you have that dedicated fund that's holding it that kind of keeps those spreads from widening out the same way. And, you know, what's helpful, I think, in kind of flagging with this too, is the role that third-party managers think play in that market, and that just because you don't have that much trading activity in these sometimes, having an institutional manager sometimes can be a real benefit because their ability to source product becomes that much more viable for an investor looking to get an allocation to that. When you look at those third-party managers, a side note, frequently, some type of vehicle is likely going to have some type of criteria listing how they evaluate and what they consider to be eligible investments. And looking at that criteria gives a way you can compare different product offerings and get a sense of, you know, if I'm motivated by not just return, I've got also sort of a socially conscious mindset of why I would like to kind of put money to work here, I can really look at different managers and get a sense for, all right, what are they considering to be eligible? And does that really align with how I'd like to direct my investments?
Okay, appreciate that. And before I wrap up, Leslie, just one more question for you. More broadly, I guess, looking at the markets, where are you seeing near-term outlook for the asset class?
Yeah, we still have overall sort of a barbell approach on, in the sense that we still think that the yield should be earned in the short end of the curve, whether that's a secured senior loan or the 1 to 3 year investment grade corporates. I mean, those, obviously the carry earned from that is actually much greater than what you're seeing in things like the 10-year, given the curve shape, and you have much lower interest rate risk. However, we're also long tips, and that, you know, depending on if you run a multi-asset portfolio and if you have equity, you want to go longer. So we're just sort of long at the back end tips like we have in the house view. And the reason why we have that is that, you know, over the past 3 months, you know, particularly the Treasury inflation protection securities have really underperformed nominal treasuries because inflation expectation has been declining much more than one would expect, particularly given the inflation numbers we've seen in CPI and PCE. Now, our view is that if interest rates rise, you know, and if we do get somewhat of recovery, you know, in the next several months, and we feel some of the positive impacts of the Fed easing, then as interest rates back up, the tips will outperform nominals. And if, in fact, you know, things go completely to the other side and we have talks breaking down, real yield should decline more, also benefiting the tips. But at the end of the day, frankly, tips are really just cheap. And within fixed income, given how well these assets have performed this year, the opportunity set is not very large. So you have a really narrow opportunity set in fixed income. We don't anticipate the returns that we've seen in 2019 to continue on to 2020 by any stretch. So I do think there, when the pockets of opportunity are the short end in yields, the long end for tips in terms of just as protection and also to hedge against equity. And then, as I said, going forward, we're going to keep an eye on mortgage-backed securities.
Absolutely. Well, Dan and Leslie, appreciate the comments, and I'm sure we'll be having you back on in the back end of this year.
Thanks again.
Thanks for having us, Nash.
And again, we've been joined by Senior Fixed Income Strategist Americas, Leslie Falconio, and Dan Kelsch, Senior Credit Strategist Americas from both the UBS Chief Investment Office. There are many publications available now up on UBS Online Services, including this aforementioned FIS report titled The Greener Side of Fixed Income. Top of the Morning, we'll be back again for you tomorrow morning. Have a great day, everyone.
This presentation is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be relied upon as investment advice or the basis for making any investment decisions. Neither UBS Financial Services, Inc. nor any of its employees provide tax or legal advice. You should consult with your personal tax or legal advisor regarding your personal circumstances. In providing wealth management services to clients, we offer both investment advisory and brokerage services, which are separate and distinct and differ in material ways. For information, including the different laws and contracts that govern, visit ubs.com/workingwithus. UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS AG, member FINRA, SIPC.